Hey, everybody.
It's nobody's fault. And honestly, so I was really stressed out, obviously. I'm like, it now pushed past. I'm not mad anymore. I'm actually happier now. And it's nobody's fault. Things happen that make no sense. It is nobody's fault. But I do think that my stress eating needs to move beyond just behind the scenes to the rest of this show will be brought to you by Famous Amos, who is not a sponsor, but I'm eating on air. Anyway, no. Okay, so we're back, everybody. Thank you. It's nobody's fault. The world is a chaotic place and everything has it in for us. That said, Francesca, are you ready to talk about
this? I'm so ready. I'm reserving my comments. Let's get to this. We got this. You got this.
Let's go to Katie Brett.
Ugh. But you've had a lot of critics out there, and I want to talk about specifically one anecdote that I've heard you tell before. It is a horrific story of a sex trafficking survivor. Nobody is questioning that the story happened, that she is actually who she is, says she is, and that this happened. The question is about the timing and the implication of you telling the story. The New York Times has this, right. None of this happened during President Biden's administration, but that didn't stop the first term senator from strongly implying that the president could have somehow prevented it from happening, using rhetoric that seemed calibrated to inflame public fears about immigration. Did you mean to give the impression that this horrible story happened on President Biden's watch?
No, Shannon, look, I very specifically said this is what President Biden did during his first 100 days.
That is Katie Brett being called out by, well, everyone, thankfully, over the weekend. But there, Fox News calling her out for doing what she denied doing, but 100% did in her State of the Union response. She intended for everyone who heard her, I'm gonna say speech, I don't know exactly if that's the right term for what she did, to believe that Biden was president when this horrible story happened, that it happened in a way that it did not actually happen, that it happened in a place that it did not happen, and that it happened during a time that it did not happen. What she effectively did was she found like a shortcut to criticizing a president, which is you just say their name, then you say a disconnected bad thing that happened, and then you say their name again. And honestly, I think it's a pretty amazing strategy. And I do have to say
FDR, at this point, just FDR 9/11, boom. Now it's in your head, FDR did 9/11.
Yeah, Donald Trump, I think, is a threat to national security. Terrorists flew planes into the Twin Towers. Trump is a threat to national security.
Easy.
That's not, what are you doing, Katie Britt? Dear God. Now, look, if I'm jumping past your knowledge of this, if there's a chance that you didn't see her speech, which I don't think there is, here is a little bit of it.
I traveled to the Del Rio sector of Texas. That's where I spoke to a woman who shared her story with me. She had been sex trafficked by the cartels starting at the age of 12. She told me not just that she was raped every day, but how many times a day she was raped. We wouldn't be okay with this happening in a third world country. This is the United States of America, and it is past time, in my opinion, that we start acting like it.
So did she try to imply that it happened under Biden? Yes, she tried to imply that it happened under Biden, which it didn't, that it happened in America, which it didn't, that it happened during the time he was president, which it didn't. And she even lied about parts. I'm not even sure why she lied about. It wasn't even the cartel that was doing it. It seems largely irrelevant. It was a tragedy regardless, but apparently she was so revved up to lie that she just had to fit in a few more. And look, we're gonna break down what actually happened. And we're gonna have the responses to it. But look, I just have to say, coming out of this, I understand that at this point, we're trained to have no faith in what politicians say. If you trust a politician, then that's a really weird way to go about your life. That said, she should be censured for this. Am I crazy to think that that is wildly dishonest? And this was not a random comment on the House floor or in a Fox appearance, although she did also lie on Fox. This was the official GOP response to Biden. She prepared that and she viciously lied in multiple ways. There should be censure. I mean, maybe only the Democrats can do it. Maybe it won't get past a filibuster or something like that. But we cannot allow you to just lie about events happening under the wrong president. It was literally a Republican president that was president of a different country than the country it happened in. I apologize, Francesca. I've honestly, we sat through tens of thousands of Trump lies. This is almost worse than any of them because of how malicious it is. What do you think?
Look, when I first heard the rebuttal, I heard the story and I was like, I bet your ass that's not true. Like because what happens in Republican spheres, and everyone is guilty of this. So this is my second point. But the first point is, I was like, I call BS on this. And lo and behold, it largely was, and it definitely didn't happen under the Biden administration. It's not on his watch, which is sort of like if you back time it when she was like, she started being trafficked at the age of 12. I talked to a woman. So you're saying 6 years ago is when it started. When did it end? Like, there's a lot of things that could have been easily checked out about that. But here's what I will say. Rarely do we actually follow up on these anecdotes that Republicans spew constantly. It really doesn't matter, right? They say all kinds of lies about, especially undocumented immigrants and things that they do or don't do. And everyone's just like, I guess, you know, like, but it's interesting that even Fox News and some right wingers are actually trying to check her, especially on this rebuttal, which never happens. And I don't know, maybe it's, look, maybe it's that she's a woman and they didn't like her performance, in which case I guess it's like sexism works out because it's exposing some of the lies that the Republicans spew. I know people like really truly hate that, but I feel like if she were a dude and she did a better job at this, no one would care that this anecdote was totally out of, you know, out of left field and inaccurate.
I think for me, it's that it's not a matter of exaggeration, or it's not a matter of taking something that you can't say the president was responsible for, but implying that a president is responsible for everything that happens in the country while they're the president. That's the normal sort of lie. This is like, this is sociopathic, the level of lie here. It is such a weird thing to do. And honestly, I believed that it happened under Biden. I was naive. You know, I criticized her on the main show, you know, pointing out you're talking like this because you're so aggrieved about rape. You're literally endorsing a rapist for president. You don't seem to mind that. And also, you're part of the GOP. Like, how many rapists have they been apologists for over the years?
And you brought up a really important point quickly, which is that she helped author this border bill that Trump is saying he doesn't want to pass. So here she is like, Biden's not doing anything. It's like, no, Trump was the one who told Republicans not to vote on it. That's why it didn't pass. Yeah. Keep going.
Yeah, and never mind the fact that as I pointed out on Friday, of course, if she became pregnant as a result of all these rapes, she would 100% require the woman to bear the rapist child. So she's awful in a lot of different ways. And like, it seems weird to even say the word performative about her because it is so clearly true, performatively pretending to care about women who've had these horrific experiences. But to use one that happened from 2004 to 2008, that wasn't even under Trump. That wasn't even under Obama. That was so long ago in a different country. Yeah. You weird woman. You weird woman. I don't understand. I don't even get why you would do this. There have definitely been rapes. We live in a terrible world. You can't go a year without something like this happening, but you don't even care to find those cases. You just go for one from two decades ago almost. Yeah. Such a bizarre thing. And I want to jump ahead. We don't have much time. I want to jump ahead to the last SOT, because Carla Jacinto Romero, the woman who actually had this experience, clarified what happened, what went wrong, and how she doesn't like that people are politicizing this in the first place.
Yes, in fact, I hardly ever cooperate with politicians because it seems to me that they only want an image. They only want a photo. And that to me is not fair. I work as a spokesperson for many victims who have no voice, and I really would like them to be empathetic. All the governors, all the senators, to be empathetic with the issue of human trafficking, because there are millions of girls and boys who disappear all the time. People who are really trafficked and abused, as Senator Britt mentioned. And I think Senator Britt should first take into account what really happens before telling a story of that magnitude.
Yeah, telling a story that she either understood and chose to lie about, or, and we shouldn't write off this possibility, that Katie Britt met with this woman and thought, I'm gonna use this, and didn't even pay attention to the details. Maybe she has no idea when it happened or who did it or where it happened. Maybe she was so thirsty to cash in that she didn't even commit to memory the horrific experience that she wanted to weaponize against other migrants. So alternate theory, I don't know which is true, but all of the options are bad. Final comment, Francesca.
Final comment, I just think it also points to the bad faith ways that Republicans try to discuss sex trafficking with no seriousness of actually trying to stop it, whether happening in the United States, which it does, or happening abroad, which it does. And you know, our border is very relevant to that discussion. Yep. They don't care, they just want to claim that Democrats are like all pedophiles, but they don't actually want to get to the root causes of like getting rid of predators or, you know, making sure that they're held accountable. Like they're hiding in their very ranks and they don't care. So again, I just think it's a slap in the face to people who truly do work around issues of sex trafficking, who want their issue, yes, to not be politicized, but actually fixed.
100%. Final point I'll make, I've asked, you know, on Friday's main show, I asked some hypothetical follow up questions to Katie Britt about things like the abortion and stuff like that, but I have one more. So when we say that some migrants have horrific circumstances in their home countries that they're trying to flee, horrific economic circumstances, threats to their well-being, threats to their life, and they come here to flee that and you ignore that, they're all just predators or whatever. Okay, well, you're using an example of someone who theoretically might want to come to America to get out of this horrific, unimaginable experience. Now, let's say that Carla makes it across the border and applies for asylum, Katie Britt. What would you like to happen? Would you like her to have to remain in Mexico for 6 months or so, being trafficked, being raped multiple times every day, while maybe we get around to her asylum claim? But you know, honestly, we don't need all these people coming to our country anyway, so maybe no asylum. Maybe instantaneously a judge just shuts her down and throws her back over the border to those people. Not the cartel, you lied about that, but the people who were the criminals of a different variety who were trafficking her and who were raping her. Should she be thrown back to that, or should America be her savior? If she had the hope that America could be a better place, should it be a better place, or should it just throw her back into that unimaginable life? Katie Britt doesn't have answers to these questions.
You just destroyed her. She's a housewife, John. That was like really rude.
Anyway, we have to take our first break. Lots more to get to. We'll be right back. Okay, everybody, we're gonna try to do a little catching up starting with this.
You've now reversed your view on banning TikTok. Why is that?
So I had it done, and then Congress said, well, they ultimately usually fail. They are like extremely political and they're extremely subject to people called lobbyists. I'm not looking to make Facebook double the size. And if you ban TikTok, Facebook and others, but mostly Facebook will be a big beneficiary. And I think Facebook has been very dishonest. I think Facebook has been very bad for our country, especially when it comes to elections.
I will agree with Donald Trump. I think Facebook has been bad for elections in ways that have obviously and reliably benefited Donald Trump and his party. But we'll set that aside because Donald Trump is flip-flopping on the topic of banning TikTok, and for an incredibly interesting reason that he actually previewed in his comment. He did a couple of things there. He said, I actually got it done. Because the thing is, this is a guy mid flip-flop. He had previously wanted to ban it, now he doesn't. And theoretically, you would want to stress the now I don't part. But he still wants credit for almost getting done the thing that he doesn't support now. So he has to say that. And he says Congress is being political and there are these things called lobbyists. And he knows something about that. And so we're going to try to catch up a little bit on the back and forth. He had this executive order that would try to ban the use of TikTok in the US. Obviously, that did not work out that way. And then last week, he seemingly changed up his tone entirely, saying, if you get rid of TikTok, Facebook and Zucker Schmuck will double their business. I don't want Facebook, who cheated in the last election, doing better. They are a true enemy of the people. You know Facebook, the election cheats, where like 9 out of 10 of the top trending stories in any given day are from right-wing sources. That's the thing that hurts the Republicans for some reason. He's not explaining why. But anyway, you might wonder, well, but if he wanted to ban it and now he doesn't, even though he still wants credit for almost banning it, why would that be? Well, as I said, he already told you why. It's lobbyists. It's just not the lobbyists that talk to Congress. It's the lobbyists who talk to Trump. Because last week, Jeff Yass visited Mar-a-Lago. He's a hedge fund manager. Trump called him fantastic, and media reports that Yass could potentially contribute generously to Trump's campaign. And we know that Trump desperately needs money. Even Elon Musk is like, I'm not giving you money. So he's going everywhere asking for it. Yass notably has a $33 billion stake in TikTok and has reportedly threatened to cut off funding to Republicans who support the divestment bill. That's the effort to try to effectively either massively change the ownership of TikTok or require that it be banned in the United States. And it's not just us saying that this is a direct result of that lobbyist pressure. Even Steve Bannon is criticizing Donald Trump, which I didn't think he physically could do. I thought he would explode if he tried. But he is pointing out that, you know, this guy, Jeff Yass, got to Trump and now he's on the TikTok train, even though he'd been spending years saying that that was how the communists are trying to win over the youth or whatever. Well, now he needs money and the Republicans need money. So I guess flame on with the youth. The communists can have them. What do you think?
Yes, King. Oh, yes. I love that a guy's last name, Yass, is saving TikTok, like Gen Z. Like, couldn't have scripted this story better. It's amazing. And of course,
if it was Michael Riz, that would have been slightly better.
Slightly better. But that's pretty amazing. The entire effort to ban TikTok is completely ridiculous and xenophobic. And if you're going to ban it on the same kinds of grounds, like the data collection, the effect on youth, all of that, then you should apply those same standards to Facebook, to Meta, to Google, to all of the things that big tech actually does. But again, the right is totally bad faith when they say they care about big tech or they say it's a weapon to spy on us. It's like, yeah, they're fine with being spied on so long as it's American companies spying on us. To say nothing of the fact that TikTok is not a Chinese Communist Party app. Although I'm sure they attempt to or they try. But lastly, I do think it's really amazing because TikTok did a really cool thing. They basically were like, call your senator and had a pop-up screen on their app where people could just push a button and be connected to their senators, which look, whatever they had to do that and like find out where you are or who your senator is or congressperson is, like, I kind of love that.
I think that's actually great.
Yeah.
The communist regime has all the info. Anyway, yes, in this case, I like it. And, you know, theoretically, if you're a big fan of TikTok, then you should have your voice be heard. I think that makes sense. There's a lot of ways that I think corporations and apps could use this to delude their audiences into putting pressure on politicians to strike down even very reasonable regulation, though. So I'm not sure I love the precedent of these pop-ups because people are just going to believe whatever the company says. And in this case, maybe they're right. But Zuckerberg could do this, you know, Instagram could do this. So I'm a little bit worried about that. That said, it really does look like they're going to do this thing. Biden says that he's going to sign it. It was unanimously supported out of committee. It looks like it's going to be passed. It does not mean that TikTok will be banned. There's a 6-month period where theoretically they could divest ByteDance, could divest their ownership down to below a threshold that allows it to continue to be available. I imagine that's how it will go. But also, if they do pass this, and especially if it is banned like right before election day, one would think that would hurt Joe Biden.
He just got on it.
He just got on it. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so we'll see what happens with that. That said, we need to talk about some other stuff. Let's jump right into this.
Of the union address, didn't it bring us together? Remember, bring the country to together. I'm going to bring it together. No.
Have I mentioned recently how much I utterly hate Donald Trump? He is just about the biggest piece of trash, I think, that we've ever been forced to contend with as a political world. That is Trump mocking Joe Biden's stutter, mocking his stutter specifically to attack Joe Biden for trying to bring people together. Which, by the way, like, I obviously am very critical of Joe Biden, but he does at least seem committed to the idea of bringing people together in a lot of areas in which I don't think you should try to do that. I think you burn a lot of your capital to do that. But he definitely does try to do that. And I don't know, like, I guess it's pointless to point this out, but Biden did not stutter while talking about that during the speech. It would be horrible even if it was accurate, but now it's horrible and inaccurate. And it's also not the first time that Trump has done this, by the way. I missed the first time, but in a speech earlier this year, he said of Biden, he's saying, "I'm a threat to democracy. He's a threat to," and then he mocks the idea of someone stuttering to say democracy. He seemingly loves the idea of mocking people who have this speech impediment. Those people, by the way, there is no reason to believe that they're anything other than evenly split between Democrats and Republicans. But I guess from Trump's point of view, if you're a Republican and you stutter, go F yourself. He doesn't give a damn about you. You are meant to be mocked because you're weak and you're below him, and screw you for existing. It's a weird way to treat your supporters, but that's what Donald Trump is effectively saying here. And as many have pointed out, it's a form of dehumanization behind a mask of humor. It reinforces the idea that the MAGA world is strong and together, and all of the outsiders are weak, even though Donald Trump is about as physically weak as a person could be. And that's what it is. And we're going to get to the White House response. But before we do that, and Francesca, before you respond, I just want to remind people of the gap between Donald Trump and Joe Biden, because Joe Biden obviously has a different history with stuttering and a different approach to other people who struggle with it. Take a look at this.
What's your name?
Owen. This is my son, Braden.
Hey, Braden, how are you, man?
We're here because he stutters and we wanted to hear you speak.
Oh, man, come on. Hey, I tell you what. Don't let it define you. You are smart as hell. Now, you really are. You can do that. Can I get a phone number for you and I can tell you what I used to do and how I would do it? Can you take his phone? Because there's about 25 stutterers I continue to work with. And I can tell you the things that help me. I know, by the way, the hardest thing is talking on the telephone. So I don't expect you to be able to. When I stuttered, I used to talk like this. And it took a lot of practice, but I promise you you can do it. I promise you. And don't let it define you. You're handsome. You're smart. You're a good guy. I really mean it. Don't let it define you. And you know, when I say I know about bullies, you know about bullies. The kids who make fun, it's going to change, honey. I promise you.
I mean, Donald Trump has never had a moment half as authentic or compassionate as that in his entire life. I know it's a campaign event. I get that. But Joe Biden apparently does do this. That one is on tape. People have seen it. It's gone around several times. But he does have dozens of people, kids, that he tries to help in this way. Donald Trump would never, ever do anything like that. He would not care enough to try to empathize with a kid who struggles with that. He would mock that kid. He would mock him to his face to make himself feel better. Francesca, what do you think?
He'd be like, do what the Little Mermaid did and use your body. You don't need a voice. You're hot. You just give him the eyes. That like made me tear up. I was not prepared to be emotional watching this president, who I have massive critiques of and very angry at when it comes to genocide in Gaza. But like, you saw the boy tearing up, and it meant a lot to him. Look, I'm not gonna lie. When Trump made fun of Biden, I actually chuckled. I laughed because he's a terrible stand-up comic who's just mean, and it gets a laugh, and that's what he wanted to do. But you're right, like, it is that is how he views his base. He mocks everyone, and specifically the people who follow him and donate to him. He thinks they're all rubes. He thinks they're suckers, just like he thinks the soldiers who fought and died in American wars are suckers. And he reserves that for everybody. Everybody's a sucker except for him.
Yeah. And I, like, again, there's a lot of differences between the two, but like I really do think, like, Joe Biden has a lot of flaws politically as a politician, and he does things politically that result in very real suffering. That said, I do think on a human level, he does actually care about people. It doesn't always lead him down the right path, and the right path is more important than, you know, what they truly believe, I think. But that said, he does actually seem to care about people. And Donald Trump has never given me the impression that he cares about anyone other than himself and maybe briefly Ivanka, honestly. Like, he cares about himself, and that is it. He would watch a group of Trump supporters on fire and he wouldn't spit on them to put it out. And I don't think that the distinction could be any clearer. That said, we do have to jump ahead to our next topic. Trump continues to struggle mentally, and more people are noticing it. And Trump appears to be noticing that people are noticing it, because on a regular basis, he's trying to come up with excuses for his weird behavior. Take a look at this.
Yeah, I gotta interrupt. You know, the fake news will say, oh, he goes from subject to, no, that's, you have to be very smart to do that. You gotta be very smart. It's called, you know what it is called? Spot checking. You're thinking about something when you're talking about something else, pop, 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 and then you get back to the original, and they go, holy, did you see what he did? That's something. It's called intelligence. But so I have a problem.
Grandpa needs a nap, just like he badly needs a nap. It's called spot-checky. I think he said spot-checking. No, dude, I don't. You can come up with whatever term you want. Donald Trump says a thing, and then he has a mental squirrel. He has a verbal squirrel. And then he's saying a different thing, and he's saying a different thing. And like Michael Scott, when he begins a sentence, he has no freaking clue where he's gonna go with it. It is not that he's bursting with so many things he has to talk about. Frequently, he's just repeating the exact same lines he's used before. He just doesn't have control over himself. He doesn't have the organization of thought. And in the same way that, like, he's not swapping names because of sarcasm. He's not going off on weird stream of consciousness rants because of Spacecki. His mind is rotting in real time. And he can try to reassure his base, and I'm sure they're very easy to reassure. But for regular people, he clearly sees this as a weakness, and he should. What do you think?
Spacecki sounds like a very delicious Italian dessert. It's what happens when your brain just melts into a bowl, and you put the bowl in the freezer, and then you take it out, and you just sort of scoop it out and eat brains. Spacecki. I'm not sure where I'm going with this. I'm having a little Spacecki myself. I gotta say, John, look, I feel like you're humble bragging, because not everyone is as organized in their thoughts as you are. Sorry. And honestly, sometimes when I hear Trump say that, I'm like, girl, me too. You know, like a little bit like I also talk like that, as I'm sure people have noticed. But yeah, no, he just, don't mention it, dude. Don't, again, with the drawing attention to the things that we shouldn't be focused on. He threw in the S word, you know, he swore, he cussed, and his base loved that. But just don't mention it. Just do better. Move on. Stop telling us about all the things. Stop focusing on media critiques. That's not a platform. I know we're not really supposed to take him seriously as a presidential candidate, but he is, and ostensibly he should be telling people what he's gonna do for them in their lives. But instead he's focused, because he's an egomaniac, on how people interpret and view him, specifically the media. Just stop.
Well, he's not really running as a politician, as the head of a political party with a platform. It's a cult of personality, and the perception of the cult leader is the most important thing. I mean, they said over this weekend, some chucklehead GOPer is like, Trump went up against two PGA like professionals in golf, and he mopped the floor at both of them. No, we didn't. Was every single one a hole in one and he doesn't poop? Is that the next thing that you're gonna say? These people are insane, okay? They're just insane. But more importantly than that, they're also dangerous. And that's where we're gonna turn to our last topic here. Donald Trump in his recent rallies is really doubling down on demonizing migrants and even trying to rebut the idea that migrants might be like regular people with hopes and dreams.
The migrants are hurting people. They talk about the beautiful dream of migrants. It sounds so nice, you know, like in a fairy tale book. But some of these people are monsters, a big percentage of.
Yeah, that went insane really fast. So, the idea, they're just, they had dreams. No, they're monsters. No, they're They're coming for opportunity. That's what they're coming for. I mean, they're literally saying that. They're screaming that they just want the chance at a better life. You know who else, other than like, you know, the people coming across the southern border? Your family, when they came here, came for that exact same reason. My family generations ago came for that exact same reason. Every single person did. Nobody is like, you know what, things are going great for me here, but I really want to commit some crimes abroad, so I think I'm gonna relocate my whole family. That's not actually how it works. And it's not enough for him to be like, it's not worth the risk because 1 in 1,000 could be bad. He has to say a very large percentage are monsters. That is insane. Francesca?
Yeah, and completely not based in fact. And, you know, to say nothing of the fact that, like, obviously, undocumented people do not commit more crimes than documented people at all. Every time the right find some victim, right? Like Lakin was the most recent victim who was supposedly killed by an undocumented person. It's always cherry picked. It's always like taken out of context and stats. Another person they talk about in 2016, a person was killed by a drunk driver who was undocumented. Drunk driving accidents happen all of the time. The idea that like they're disproportionately being committed by undocumented people is absolutely ridiculous. And finally, if any of these rich mofos had to go a day without the work of either documented or undocumented migrants, they wouldn't survive, period.
100%. Yeah, 100%. But they're really doubling down this. He's just rebleeding every horribly designed meme imaginable. So this one says, they're not migrants, they're criminals. Well, even if they're criminals, they're still also migrants. Like, worst case scenario, they're both. What are you talking about? What point are you trying to make? And then he says it's like an act of treason or whatever. I just want to point out, by the way, this is Donald Trump saying, don't let them across the border. They're monsters, they're criminals. Can I just interject to point out that Donald Trump is credibly accused of stealing hundreds of government documents, of trying to overturn the results of an election, violating campaign finance law to cover up the fact that he cheated on his wife. Oh, he also raped a woman and then defamed her for literally decades while committing years and years worth of tax and insurance fraud in New York to the tune of hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. He's kind of the monster in this story. I think he's kind of the criminal, actually.
Yeah.
He's warning us that like some family from Guatemala that just wants to work so that their kids can get an education someday, they're monsters. He's standing there as a guy who has already lost civil lawsuits to the tune of $500 million and is facing 4 different federal lawsuits and the Georgia inquiry and potentially Arizona as well. There are a lot of migrants who are incredibly hardworking. There's no way they could commit the level of crimes that Donald Trump has. He is truly unique in that. Also, he honored Viktor Orban in a speech over the weekend. Dear God, saying, this guy, he says this is the way it's gonna be and that's the end of it. He's the boss. He's an authoritarian leader.
Go run for president of Hungary. Like, go there.
He might win.
I mean, I'm just like, if you don't like democracy, you're in the wrong country, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how this country works. Love it or leave it,
yeah,
as they say.
And by the way, go there and then you'll save money on shipping Eastern European women to you here in the United States.
Hey, there you go.
It's local delivery. It'd be much cheaper.
Much fresher.
Cool. Anyway, okay, we're going to take our last break of the first hour. We'll be right back. We cut you off there. It was a good Andrew Tate. Okay, maybe we'll have an Andrew Tate story and we can roll that out for a national audience. Okay, with that said, why don't we move into what likely will be the last story of this first hour. Okay, let's jump into this. There is apparently a secret men's only right wing society that has one goal for America: to turn it into the Christian nation they think it should have always been. It's effectively regime change. It's a change of form of government. And there's a variety of different ways that they're working on it. But one is national divorce. which I think is ironic because all of these men think that there shouldn't be a right to divorce because they know that their women in their life are likely to try to flee at some point.
Yes.
But anyway, they're moving forward. This is the Society for American Civic Renewal. Apparently, members of the group call it the Sackers. Think about that and all the implications of it. But anyway, it is open to new recruits. So if you're looking for a social group, but there are some requirements. You have to be male. You have to be a Trinitarian Christian, heterosexual, an unhyphenated American, and can answer questions about Trump, the GOP, and Christian nationalism in the right way. One chapter leader wrote to a prospective member that the group aimed to secure a future for Christian families. So, like, if you're asked about, you know, should America be a Christian nation, you have to say yes. Does Donald Trump have six-pack abs? You have to say yes, obviously. And you have to be unhyphenated. Because the hyphenated Americans have too many things other than American that they stress rather than just American. Not these guys, except that they stress their white nation of origin, the fact that they're Christians, the particular sect of Christianity that they're a part of. But they're not into identity politics or anything. They just have a long line of identities that you have to match up for, or you literally can't join their group. There's a lot of irony in this whole thing. Anyway, Talking Points Memo has done a great report on this. You should definitely look at that. But they talk about how the members of this group are pretty influential. You've got the president of the Claremont Institute, Harvard law grads, leading businessmen in communities scattered across America. They're wealthy. Independent wealth is actually a requirement for membership. So also, you conservative poors don't even think about it. Never forget for a second that they hate you. Anyway, members must be able to either contribute, influence, capability, or wealth. And again, in addition to the conservative poor thing, I want to remind you, the Republican Party is anti-elite. They just have a group of secretive elites that are all wealthy and influential that want to remake America in their own image. So anyway, we have more, Francesca, but what do you make of this?
I mean, that's the most egregious lie of all, right? The idea, I mean, and I think John Oliver did that segment about the Supreme Court talking about Clarence Thomas, like, oh, the elites win. Bro, you are bought by elites. You go on elite vacations with your elites all the time. But here's, it's not enough to already be like a white, cis, hetero, wealthy, Harvard educated, you know, graduate. Like, it's not enough to have all of these things going for you. Fragility is such that they must create another separate secret society to make sure that they're treated extra special. Honey, you're already treated extra special. Yep. You have everything you've ever wanted. You won the lotto of life. But they're like, no, but it's not explicitly racist enough. And it just, I have, lastly, non-hyphenated Americans is the most creative way I've heard white people be racist in a very long time. Like, you gotta hand it to them. They keep on coming up with ways to say not white.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's often made, there's a big deal made of the fact that these are not creative people on the right. They're not good at comedy. They can't write movies that people actually want to see. But in their racism, they are sometimes quite creative. I do agree with you there. The entire thing is, it's like, it would be a joke if it wasn't deeply concerning. The idea that, like, we want a Republican Party in a US government that's Christian or whatever, like, that's what your entire party has been pushing for like the better part of a half century at the very least. I love when, like, their big thing is the thing. You guys killed Roe v. Wade. What exactly are you not getting out of government that you want so badly?
Polygamy.
And we know what it is. It's literally just the presence of black and brown people. The fact that women can be senators or whatever. Like, Katie Britt better appreciate that position while she can. Because in a perfect world, according to these people, she wouldn't even be there. By the way, women can't join this group. Like, just to be clear.
I was going to ask. That was my next.
Yeah, no, of course. But also, you have to be strictly heterosexual, okay? We don't want anything weird in our all-male group that we meet up, and we never want any women to be there because women drool and men rule. Never forget it. The whole thing is super weird. You can't be Mormon. You can't be a Jehovah's Witness. You can't be Christian Scientist, because even, like, they are so horny for hierarchy and excluding people that even being Christian isn't enough for these people. They have to come up with, like, new smaller versions of Christianity that they think are cool. Anyway, the whole thing is just utterly, utterly ridiculous. But again, these are people who have money, that have influence. They're already supporting candidates. It's not like they haven't gotten a bunch of people into positions of authority that agree with this. They're literally filling up the Supreme Court with them right now. So it's like on its face, it's a joke. And these are, this appears to be like a, you know, massively wealthy group of angry incels. Like they're messaging each other from a really immaculately decorated basement. That's the vibe that I'm getting here. But
I mean, it's terrifying. It's terrifying because these are the folks. I mean, it's a joke until you realize the power and grip they have on American politics and our courts. And again, this is not a far cry from the Federalist Society. And it's not a far cry from Project 2025 and the Heritage Foundation. It is all in the same gross little soup. And they're trying to reverse the decline of American society. They basically mean rolling back like the Civil Rights Act and, yeah, you know, the right to vote for women, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's just like, again, at what point are you gonna grow an inch down there, bro? It's not gonna happen. You could do everything. You could put the crystal back the way Indiana Jones did, and the curse of you having a T little D is not gonna be reversed.
Was that a reference to the crystal skull?
I don't know.
It doesn't often get referenced, so I like you spreading the spreading out there. Yeah. I will never understand. I will try. If you will have me, America, I'll continue doing something like this for the next couple decades. And when I finally stop, I will still never understand how this party that screams as loud as they can, we only care about white, straight, rich males, has any supporters who are not white, straight, rich males. I will never understand it. Why are you supporting these people who utterly despise you? Look, I might mock you from time to time. Granted, that's annoying. But I want you to have a better life. They don't care what happens to you. They really don't. Donald Trump loves to pretend that he hates Hollywood. He hates celebrities. He hates those liberal coastal elites. And yet he can't seem to quit them, because as the Oscars were going on, he was 100% watching and pretending that he didn't like anything that he saw. So he sent out this message on Truth Social saying, "Has there ever been a worse host than Jimmy Kimmel at the Capitol, the Oscars? His opening was that of a less than average person trying too hard to be something which he is not and never can be. Get rid of Kimmel and perhaps replace him with another washed up but cheap ABC talent, George Slapanopoulos." Why is George Stephanopoulos being attacked?
I don't know why you gotta bring him into this.
What does he have to do with the Oscars? He's a political guy, you weirdo. Stay in a lane. I understand that you're doing Spicheki, but like, stay on topic. Anyway,
he would make everybody on stage look bigger, stronger, and more glamorous. Also, a really bad politically correct show tonight and for years. Capital D, disjointed, boring, and very unfair. Who is it unfair to?
Were you a big fan of Maestro and you think that it didn't get its due? Did you think that Margot Robbie deserved a nomination for Barbie? What was unfair about it?
Exactly.
Anyway, and I love that like his issue with George Slapanopoulos is that he's not physically impressive enough. Okay, I don't think that's supposed to be his appeal. But anyway, I first saw that message, Francesca, not on True Social. I saw it when Jimmy Kimmel live read it on stage. And then his response is pretty simple to Donald Trump. He said, "Isn't it past your jail time?" And I'm not a huge Jimmy Kimmel fan. I'm more of a Colbert guy, but that's a pretty good line. I did appreciate that.
Oh, I thought it was brilliant. And I actually really like Kimmel. What I like about Kimmel is that he is very effortless. Like, Kimmel has the thing that comics always want, which is crushing while seeming like you're just talking. And Colbert does a lot. He's very big, and Kimmel's super understated. And I thought he was perfect. Like, I rewatched his monologue and I was like, man, that was perfect. Like, he wasn't trying to do too much, but that moment of, "Isn't it past your jail time?" Not even trying to hit it too hard. Again, just like, "Isn't that past your jail time?" Mwah. It was so brilliant.
And just, you know what I loved about it? So it was good. And by the way, when I say I prefer like Colbert, I just don't watch the Kimmel show. I like him as the host of the Oscars. I think that he does a great job. I think there's a reason they brought him back like four times. Just, I don't watch a lot of late night TV, and I'm already watching Colbert. So like, I like Seth Meyers, but I don't watch Seth Meyers. I love Colbert.
I don't watch any of these. I don't watch any of them.
I don't really, but
not 50.
Yeah, but what I, shut up. But what I like is Donald Trump, he has to tune in. He has to. But he also can't help but comment about it. Like, you could have just watched it and not liked it, or realistically watched and liked it. I mean, that's why you're watching it. You could just watch something else, you weirdo. But then he has to say something, and that led to the jail time thing. And that was a burn against Trump. But they then turn the camera to the audience, and every one of these famous people that he desperately wishes liked him are laughing in his face over it. They're all laughing, and not just about him being mocked, but about the fact that he faces the possibility of going to jail. You have Margot Robbie Trump laughing at the fact that you're gonna be locked up, knowing that when you do get locked up, Margot Robbie and all these other women that you desperately wish you could get with are gonna love the fact that you're no longer free. And he brought that on himself because he just couldn't let it go. Okay, he had to say something.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, it's like when it's like when John Oliver mocks like Elon Musk, and they have to tweet about it. All John Oliver wants is to know that it bothered you, you dumb donkey. Just don't say anything. But they're too stupid.
Do we have dumb donkey shirts yet?
We should have dumb donkeys. You know, people are gonna take it seriously. Everybody's like, donkeys are nice. I'm not actually besmirching donkeys. Oh, anyway, look, that was all funny. That wasn't honestly why I wanted to talk about the Oscars. It was mainly this, is that there was a little bit of political advocacy, and I thought that, Francesca, you might appreciate it. You had some people wearing ceasefire pins, Billie Eilish, Mark Ruffalo, Rami Youssef. I think, did Mark Ruffalo win an award? He might have won.
I don't think so, but.
He didn't win for Poor Things?
Eilish won.
Yeah, she did.
For her Barbie song. The fact that Billie Eilish wore a pin, I think, is huge. It's an Artist for Ceasefire pin. And Billie Eilish is arguably the biggest celebrity that you care about at the Oscars if you're under 30.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not under 30, so I only like Robert De Niro or something. I liked Al Pacino in the way that he totally ruined the revelation of Best Picture. But anyway, it wasn't just the.
It was so weird.
What are you doing, Al Pacino? That was weird. Like, people worked their whole careers to get that, and you kind of ruined it a little bit. But anyway, you also had director Jonathan Glazer, who condemned what he referred to as the occupation and bombing of Gaza. He was the most clear out of anyone about all this. He said, "Our film shows where dehumanization leads at its worst. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October the 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack on Gaza, all the victims of this dehumanization, how do we resist?" And that was like, my stream actually froze briefly on that. It had happened a few times, so I don't think it was like censorship or whatever. But that was about as strong as you would have seen in a comment. And I love to see a little bit of that. What'd you think?
And then it was incredibly poignant. And the fact that he was accepting for a film about the Holocaust, about Auschwitz, that it was a foreign film made sense. And that he said, and he and his producers or directors are Jewish, and you're in a town. You're in Hollywood, right? There are a lot of Jews in Hollywood, and it got an applause. That is massive, you guys. I think we need to understand that Michael Moore, when he spoke out against the Iraq War in the year 2003, was booed. And a couple years later, everyone was like, nope, it was awful. Now we're seeing 31,000 Palestinians and of course 1,200 Israelis murdered later. That like, there is no more fear anymore, and that Jews are actually leading the call for peace as they did outside of the Oscars, inside of the Oscars. So just amazing hats off to Jonathan Glazer.
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah, very much so. Was there anything else that happened at the Oscars that you wanted to mention since we're on the topic?
I mean, I did rewatch Ryan Gosling sing I'm Just Ken twice, and I slept very good thinking about it.
I missed that part. I was taking care of the baby. I have not seen any. I watched some of Oppenheimer. This was just not a year in Best Picture movies for me. I was not interested in really any of them. But I will say, I'm kind of curious about Poor Things.
Not enough explosions or superheroes.
Shut up. Those are good movies.
Where's
the Marvels is good. Anyway, I will say that Emma Stone's acceptance was very touching. She seems delightful. I loved how overcome she was with emotion. And I might have to watch Poor Things as a result of that. Anyway, that is unfortunately all the time we have for the first hour of the show. But don't you worry, we have some fun stuff coming up for the aftermath, including some thoughts about a few of the things that happened at the Oscars. Nancy Mace getting into almost a screaming fight with George Stephanopoulos. And we have to, at long last, it's been a long break, talk about Bill Maher and one of his theories for the election. All that and more after this.